Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we're talking about Gone in 60 Seconds, which has turned out to be our most difficult episode to date. File issues and recordings and reschedulings and whatever. We're still putting out an episode for you, which is what you crave. Nick Cage acting crazy. In the meantime, I am here to remind you to join the Patreon. You'll get extra episodes. I'm here to remind you to, well, review us, rate us. We're getting downloads globally now, which is great, but we need more global reviews then. Otherwise, we just appreciate you for being you. Thanks, guys. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we are caging out with 1999. I almost pulled this up. I almost thought ahead. 2000. We are caging out with 2000's remake of Gone in 60 Seconds, the film that is preposterous enough to presuppose, what if Angelina Jolie had white girl dreads? I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, and White Devil at the moment. Check our YouTube page to see what I'm referring to. And on panel, we have Daniel.
Hello, this is Daniel, frequent contributor to Popdose.com, and when I was in college, Gone in 60 Seconds was my nickname among the sororities.
Matt.
Matthew W. Quinn, dispenser of awful puns.
And Nor.
Nor Trinette, this is my audition video for my ASMR role coming up.
Nor has a brand new microphone, and he is taking it through his face.
I really like this. I can make all the mouth noises, but you can mute me out if it's too much. I'm kidding.
Hey, you know what, audio company? If this pisses you off, you can feel free to sponsor us, and we will use our own microphones, or your microphones, or whatever you've got.
And this episode is brought to you by Blue Yeti.
I have the snowball. You have the actual Yeti, I think.
Yeah.
Are you trying to white this?
Yeah, I don't know. I used to think I want to do commercials. I'm thinking about that with my voice. I don't know. I have a very particular high pitched voice, especially when I get excited or I'm lying. So
yeah, every time I hear Barry White these days, all I can think of is don't bother the snakes. Leave all those snakes alone.
Nor does get quite giddy. Which you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell until I break him. My goal generally when we record is trying to get Nor to break. Which, you know,
it's kind of the way it happens.
Yeah, it does.
It always happens.
So this is my suggestion, so I'll try to give it a plot synopsis. It's also, am I the only one who had seen this before? Probably.
I think I did.
Okay.
No, I saw it in theaters.
Oh, really?
When it came out.
Mm-hmm. I was aware of what this movie was. I'd seen trailers for it, but I never saw it until we had to do it for this podcast. Oh, God, Nick's found the Zoom feature.
I mean,
we've got some Nickception going on here for those of you who are watching us on YouTube, if we ever put it on YouTube.
Oh, it'll be on YouTube. I swear, I bought this. This is one of those ones, like, near me, of course, there was a Blockbuster on the corner, but the closer video was a Hollywood video. And so what they would do is whenever a movie came out, they would buy 6,000 copies of it. And then the second they stopped being rented out in such mass quantities, you'd be able to find them in a bin for like $6. So for a while there, I had 2,000 movies, all of which had stickers on them from Hollywood Video for about $4.50. And you know, around Chris Mahana Kwanzadon, they would be like $5 for $20 or something. And so I just walk in and just end up with stacks of movies. And this is one of those. So like I saw this movie 2000, 2001, when it first came on DVD. And then soon after, I owned a copy, which I probably saw 5-6 more times because, you know, it's pseudo-masculine nonsense to be obsessed with cars. But this movie loves freaking cars. So credit where credit's due. And it's a stupid, fun movie.
Okay. I have to ask, did that DVD include that you wouldn't download a car commercial?
100% did. Oh, and an extra long FBI logo, but it was one of those FBI logos that they changed from just a solid color screen to like a badge, you know? It's one of those.
Did the FBI ever bust anyone for
pirating movies per se.
They probably busted someone akin to that first Fast and the Furious movie where there's like a truckload of someone like bootlegging an entire operation.
Right.
The people who brought us down when we were in college was the RIAA and the MCAA, right? MPAA. Those were the people who were following like the downloader sites, and they'd all of a sudden file a lawsuit against a woman in her 60s for like $6 million.
They
would be, like, lurking on Morpheus and Kazaa and Napster, and they would just have tracking bots. So you would install something that you thought was like Halo 2 on your computer, and it would just fill you with a tracker that then they would sue you for all of your MP3s or whatever it was.
The good old LimeWire.
That's right. And I mean, it's as though it wasn't bad enough that every third thing you got from that was a virus. One of those horrible porno viruses that just caused your printer to literally burst into flames.
I don't know what kind of viruses you got on your computer that make your printer jealous and and go into flames. I don't know.
Herpes. Herpes will make your printer burst into flames.
What are you doing with your computer?
Ask Nick.
Matt, talking about computer herpes here. Okay, so let's talk about this film very quickly. Just your basic bread and butter description of this. Giovanni Ribisi plays a meth head who's a failure at life. And after stealing a Porsche by breaking the window of the dealership and, I don't even know what, like, then, like, running a cop off the road, he gets arrested. And he apparently is doing a major whatever, grift, a huge order of 50 stolen cars for the Ninth Doctor, who has
fallen
into a pile of cocaine.
And he has hair. Somehow he has hair.
Dude, he has the worst wiggy wig I have ever seen, and also no eyebrows. He's a very weird villain in this. But regardless, he is then, in the greatest scene of the movie, strapped to a car and handcuffed to a steering wheel, which is in a car crusher. And you think, hey, this is a brilliant short film that's 20 minutes long. But no, they have to bust Nick Cage out of retirement where he is teaching kids how to go-kart. He then brings the team back together to try to steal the 50 cars, ignoring the fact that apparently they'd already stolen 20 of those cars, whatever, in a one-night heist trying to steal 50 cars, all the while the great Delroy Lindo is on their tail trying to break up this ring before we get to the finish line. And it's race to the finish between Nick Cage, Delroy Lindo, and Chris Eccleston's goons to try to steal 50 cars. So his brother doesn't get killed in a car crusher. How'd I do?
Yeah, basically.
That was a movie.
That's pretty much it.
Thanks, guys.
That's all, folks.
I don't know. I mean, this movie came out in the early, I think, like you said, 2000. Jerry Bruckheimer was still a big deal, and he's the guy who produced this movie. And between like 1995 and up to Pirates of the Caribbean, he was one of the biggest producers in the world. And Nick Cage and Angelina Jolie had recently won Oscars, so that was still a big deal. Yep. And yes, they're both Oscar winners, including Nick Cage.
He won Moonlighting?
He won for Leaving Las Vegas.
Leaving Las Vegas, that's right.
Was that the one where he didn't have a hand with Cher?
Not Moonlighting, Moonstruck is what you're thinking of.
Yes.
Oh, he was like a baker too?
Yes.
Okay.
And Giovanni Ribisi has won an award for the Black Film Critics Circle Awards for Selma. And that's it. Oh, the Georgia Film Critics Association also nominated him for Selma. He's not a very good actor.
I disagree with
you
that.
You like Giovanni Ribisi?
He's been in some interesting things.
I'll give you interesting. I will give you interesting.
Hey, he seems fine in this one. I mean, when I think of bad acting, I think of bad delivery. And he doesn't, like, deliver badly. He just plays a loser.
Well, he can't get a line out to save his life in this. I mean, what he's good at usually is he plays the best actor in a bro movie. Like, he's in that horrible Boiler Room movie, and he's good in that because he's also acting off Vin Diesel. But here, I'd say he's swallowed up in incompetence over Nick Cage, who's really good, and Delroy Lindo, who's pretty damn good. I mean, like, I will also say this suffers from being after the Ocean's 11. I think it's still among the Ocean's trilogy, but it's after Ocean's 11. And so this wants to be Ocean's 11 so badly that you have, like, all right, we're going to put together a team. And this team is going to have the funny black guy, the talented tech dude, the weird guy, the awkward dude, the old guy who's been here before, right? Like, and then just have this movie is assembling a team. And the actual night of takes 25 minutes. And then there's a shootout with Chris Eccleston.
Yeah, the actual – it gets fun only about the last second half of the film. The first part kind of dragged a bit.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Matt. That was – yeah, it doesn't become interesting until they start actually stealing the cars.
I mean, that's the whole point of moving stuff. But
I just wish they'd get there faster.
Well, the one thing I can appreciate about this movie is, especially now, you know, we just had Fast and Furious 9 come out, which it was a lot of bullshit movie car stunts. Like, literally, what was it, Vin Diesel jumped over a bridge with no bridge using ropes and his nitrous, and he swung across. As much as CGI that we get in this film is when the 1967 Shelby GT500, which is called Eleanor in this movie, goes on the highway because it's blocked, and it jumps over a little rail. Okay, I can get that. It's really hard to do that, but everything else, as far as the explosion, car chases and stuff like that, that's as far as I think it holds true. It's not bullshit, especially in 2000s, you know. Mm-hmm. But there were some like over the top and kind of racist scenes, especially with the one black guy.
Oh, dude.
I think who what's the actress name? Basically, he was like a DMV driving instructor. This is the part that I'm just like, oh, this is an early 2000 racism. He was
the guy in that one scene when somebody tries to carjack him, and he's like, are you pulling a gun? And just like hits the guy, and it's like, you know nothing about stealing cars.
Well, you need a role model.
The actor is Charlie Pride, and he's to Noor's point, the racism is he is a driving test instructor, and there's an Asian girl who can't drive.
And then he makes a joke, was like, listen, you can't drive and I can't swim, but you don't see me out here in the ocean and you shouldn't be driving.
That's right.
Like, that was like super early on. And
wait.
That's how we're introduced to the character, in fact.
You mean there's a joke in a Jerry Bruckheimer produced movie that's racist?
This is the same producer that did Bad Boys and all that kind of stuff. So he's very comfortable just playing that. So yeah.
And Armageddon and
Armageddon
and stuff.
Yep. G-Force, that Disney movie.
Crimson Tide, if anybody remembers that movie. The Denzel
with Nick Nolte?
No, Crimson Tide, with Denzel Washington on the
sub. Right.
He's beating up Gene Hackman for trying to start a nuclear war.
Beating him up in a prison fight with phone books.
We got Pearl Harbor, the Con Air. What else? He's done it all. He's done every movie over as far as what I know. He's been he has been a lot.
No, I mean he was action in the 80s and early 90s just because of the cocaine he did. But also, I mean, like, this is his last. And you're right, there are a lot of elements here, but this is after his time, and you can kind of tell with this. I will say they did make one excellent production decision, which is hire Vinnie Jones, but not let him speak. Vinnie Jones plays the Sphinx. I think he's a terrible actor. He's been in some good movies, and he's been good in some movies. It's just that here he's just a strong Englishman who beats the shit out of some dude who's trying to, you know, mess with Nick Cage.
That was an impressive scene there. Some gangbangers are beating up Nicolas Cage. And he proceeds to just show up, set their cars on fire.
Yeah.
Like, he turns each car into a Molotov cocktail.
Well, we got to appreciate who the gangbanger is, played by Master P, which I don't know if anyone back in the early days of hip hop and stuff, was a big producer. Little Romeo, that's his little kid. Yeah. You know, Bow Wow. Wow.
You think we don't remember Master P?
I don't know. Maybe not. I do. But
I remember when Master P showed up on Mad TV back in the day. So it was him and Will Sasso making them joke 'em ups together.
I mean, and we say Master P because he actually mattered. They really wanted TJ Cross to be a thing at this time. And he does not live outside of this time period, I don't think. But he's mm-hmm. the one who plays Mirror Man. All of them have such cute nicknames. Also have a very young Timothy Oliphant in this as well.
Can we go back a little bit towards never. The beginning? Okay, sure. Of course not.
Okay, so we have a 35-minute sequence inside a clock for some reason, because this movie is called Gone in 60 Seconds, wherein we're establishing for literally 3 minutes the entire cast. And then we have TJ Cross. I'm trying to think of who the white guy is in that, other than Giovanni Ribisi. William Lee Scott, who are the three besties who are trying to steal this Porsche by throwing a brick through the window. Right.
That's how you do it.
Yeah, subtle. I like the idea subtle. That they have to learn how to be, you know, Grand Theft Auto, like real masters of stealing cars, which involves a brick and reading a license plate before stealing a car. Yeah, real fucking skillful, guys.
I mean, to tell you the truth, after watching this, I did want to play some Grand Theft Auto.
Totally. No, I'm with you. Now, this is older than you, and I apologize, Mr. Chernet, but my game at the time, which is a lot like this, is Need for Speed, which was a car racing game. But after the first one, which was, you know, a mediocre game, car companies started licensing. So you could literally play an all Porsche version of it where Porsche went in and made sure the cars had the right statistics. And so, like, I was like, well, I know this is a Porsche 911 Turbo, and I played with that car. And, like, when he's talking off stuff, and remember, like, and there's, like, an Escalade, and remember when that used to matter? And
yes.
And then they made up the GT. They made up the Shelby, kind of, sort of, but we'll get there when we get to Eleanor. But yeah, Grand Theft Auto, like, especially the old school nonsense where it wasn't 20 minutes to get a sandwich and then you have to go to a gym. Mm-hmm. When you're playing Vice City, you just beat the shit out of people for no reason.
Those are the days, man. Those are the days.
Those are the days. Games don't have to have points.
Well, this isn't really a game, though. They try it so hard to make this into a movie, even though it kind of is a Grand Theft Auto game, because the whole second and third act is, okay, how many cars do they have left to steal?
Well, you don't recharge your health with a hooker, although there is a scene where they get in a car and watch these people go at it, and then they start making out while making stick shift jokes.
When did you ever recharge your health by picking up a hooker in Grand Theft Auto?
I don't remember. I only played the game a couple of times, but I've heard it discussed.
I don't recall that happen. Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
I got to bust out my PS2 and see if that's if that can happen. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it was that and burgers.
Yeah, burgers, right. Definitely.
I do remember the burger chain. Okay, so early on, the cops are brought to this warehouse because the guy gets whatever. He steals a horse in a stupid way. This is where we're introduced to the great Delroy Lindo with his younger assistant, Timothy Oliphant, who are, you know, car cops. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
That's a movie. Car cops.
Car cops. What you gonna do? Yeah.
One of them is...
Damn car cops after me again. I'm a tree.
One of them is one of the dudes from Get Shorty.
Who? One of which dudes?
The car cops. It's Timothy Oliphant and Delroy Lindo.
Yeah, Delroy Lindo. He's fantastic. And he's the one from Get Shorty. He's also from Malcolm X. He's the scientist in previous episode, The Core. And if you haven't seen the new Spike Lee movie, The Five Bloods, he's in that as well. And he's very good in that. But again, speaking of a tree that's come to life, the man is, you know, 12 feet tall, has a deep voice, and is like, we're going to get Nick Cage. And you realize when you hire a man like that, he might just get Nick Cage. Meanwhile, Christopher Eccleston is what a British person thinks that Hannibal Lecter is. I don't know. Like, he's just evil for some reason. They characterize him in a decent but cheap way by having him be a carpenter, kind of. And then
obsessed. Yeah, but he gets he gets a hard on for wood.
Which is stupid.
He gets a wood for wood.
He hand makes a coffin that he's going to put Memphis's brother, Giovanni Ribisi, in if he doesn't get the cars.
Which is stupid, because if you're going to put him in a coffin, don't crush him into a cube.
That way you know he'll fit.
Well, that's true, I guess.
It's true.
We should have made, but like, if that's the joke, you should make a tiny wooden box and be like, don't worry, he'll fit in this eventually.
Yeah?
I fixed your movie.
It wasn't going to work out that way.
Anyway, and so, you know, to get Nick Cage out of retirement, we have, you know, the old guy played, it's not Robert Duvall who goes in. It is
Robert Duvall.
Yeah, it's Robert Duvall.
Okay, so Robert Duvall plays the old guy who runs, like, a mechanic shop from which they run this heist, essentially, this heist, right? We have Scott Conn in this playing a dipshit because he kind of always plays a dipshit. And Will Patton, who's kind of the coordinator.
Speaking of Armageddon.
Yeah, and speaking Jared of Bruckheimer. Armageddon. Anyway, so Nick Cage is talked out of retirement by Will Patton, who comes and gets him and says, hey, your brother's in trouble. And at this point, we put the brother in a car crusher, which I'm totally fine with. After about 20 minutes, we're finally introduced to Chris Eccleston, who is playing Raymond Calitri, right? Who is now the head mobster taking over whatever generic town this is supposed to be.
I think it's Long Beach.
It is, yeah.
Right.
He's been kicked out of other countries, so now he just comes to America, complains about baseball, and has severe anger management issues.
He is very loosely interpreted as a bored Brit who makes fun of baseball in the most generic way possible, saying it's boring. That's kind of it. He disappears for 2/3 of this movie and then come back just to threaten. Has anyone seen the original, by the way?
No, I have not.
I think it's a steep.
It's only the way I've known about it was the reference to The Last Chase, which evidently happens similar to in this movie with the Shelby GT 500. That Last Chase with Stephen Queen is just well known for not having a soundtrack and just letting like the car and the sound effects from the car, i.e. like the tire screech, the muscles, the up and down, like completely silent, let that be like the music. Whereas, you know, as we'll talk about the last scene of the movie, there's a bunch of, you know, explosions, music, you know, suspenseful music and things like that. So,
yeah, and it makes me want to watch it because I love old 70s, like everyone is like on cocaine, like you can see the sweat through the screen kind of movies like that. I mean, we stay tuned to the Patreon. We did the Cannonball Run, and that's kind of a perfect example of Hal Needham and a pile of blow. But like,
to be clear, this wasn't quite a Steve McQueen movie. It was far, far, far more low budget than that. The director and writer was somebody, and star was somebody named H.B. Halicki. Yeah. Okay. And other than that, I'm sure your description of the scene there is right, Noor. This Halicki guy apparently died before he was 50 back in 1989.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the last thing he wrote was a short film called Gone in 60 Seconds 2. Wait a minute. I might be wrong on that. Gone in
62 seconds.
Oh.
Okay. Gone in 120 seconds.
That's right. Oh, that's what this is. There was an unfinished sequel that where they spliced the footage together in 2003 and released it, and that was supposed to be Gone in 60 Seconds too.
There you go. But yeah, I mean, like, and to your point, I don't know, like, and Steve McQueen and Bullet, like, you know, that's what you're kind of trying to do here with the long car chases and whatever. Anyway, so the next chunk of this is Nick Cage pulls a gun on Chris Eccleston. And he says, I'll get you your cars and, you know, just promise not to keep crushing my brother. And his brother is in the car at the time, which is great. I don't know.
Kind of better. He wanted to see him die or something.
I, I don't know. Like, there's almost stakes in this movie, kind of. But I don't know. It is what it is. And then he proceeds to make Nick Cage, as a thank you, the worst breakfast I've ever seen. Mm-mm-mm. They're in this terrible whatever. You said Long Island kitchen. He's holding a bottle of whiskey and he's just throwing shit into a pan, or probably cheap beer. And you just have like bacon. You have a pile of salt. You have sausage. You have beer. And then like four eggs he cracks into this nonsense. And then Nick Cage immediately like eats it. It's like, this is terrible. And you're just like, yeah. Like,
I think something catches fire in the process.
Well, it was a thank you breakfast. It was a thank you breakfast for not getting me crushed, even though I fucked up. Meal, you know, and yeah. But this just proves to Nick Cage, Memphis character, that my little brother doesn't know anything, even how to cook breakfast and stuff. But I will say, there's one thing that did get me choked up about this movie is, and similar to what the Fast and Furious movie does, is this concept of family,
right?
And that was the heartwarming part in the whole motivation.
We're talking, we're getting into Vin Diesel territory here as we go into family.
Well, hold on. Do you know what the director's name is?
Of this one?
Yes, it is Dominic Cena, which also correlates to Dominic Toretto, which is
that's right.
Vin Diesel's character. So that's the mm-hmm. that's one thing I thought of after that whole 2 minute rap beginning credit scene. That was one thing that I pointed out. So.
Director of such things after this as Swordfish, if you remember that movie, a whole bunch of music videos that you probably don't remember. California, 1993. The last thing he did was Season of the Witch, which also had Nick Cage in it. So, oh, yeah, right. We're very much in late 90s action movie fodder here.
Do you think, I remember Swordfish.
You've seen Swordfish?
Oh, I love Swordfish. From the Halle Berry? Okay.
Oh, that's the one.
Have I seen Swordfish? Of course I've seen Swordfish. That and Monster Ball are my favorite movies from Halle Berry.
The topless Halle Berry movie, right?
Wait, what? I saw this on TBS.
Oh, never mind then. Uh-huh. I thought that was the big uh-huh. thing back in the day.
I got it on DVD from that whole bin sale that Hoffman was talking about.
Yeah, from the Blockbuster version that edited that scene out, right?
How much was your DVD skipping by the end there?
Yeah, that's right. I'm gonna let that sit.
Here's the big thing about this movie. The time between 2000 and 9/11 was a very weird time in retrospect, because especially in movies, everything was still acting like it was the 90s. Like every big blockbuster still felt like a 90s blockbuster. You had to have a big name cast. You had to have a bunch of outrageous stunts. There were no superhero movies really at that point. It kind of ended at Die Another Day, the last Pierce Brosnan movie. But this, watching this now, it just feels kind of anachronistic.
Well, it's just a weird time. Like you said, this is like not what 9/11 did essentially is kill the meaningless action movie. Right now, all action movies have to have something like massive on the line. You know, like think of the Jason Bourne movies or the Blank Has Fallen movies or even the Bond movies afterwards. This movie has such low stakes, it's actually kind of refreshing, right? I don't give a shit about this family. I don't give a shit about whether or not his brother survives. So it's just kind of a fun action movie, right? Not that I necessarily care if, you know, the latest Die Hard movie actually stops the Russians from Huzufuz. Or I think Timothy Oliphant's in one of those, too. But, like, whether or not the internet, like, doesn't save the world. But those are huge freaking stakes. Right. This movie's stakes are meaningless. You know, a bunch of rich people lose their cars and they'll get them back. And that's kind of it.
Yeah.
If you have insurance. Yeah.
Yes.
I guess it's a win-win situation. So the only one who does have a stake is Memphis and his little brother.
That's right. That's literally it. Because they're robbing cheap people. It's not like give me 50 Honda Civics. It's give me this BMW like 5M series. And then, like, oh, no, those are insured. Everyone's insured. So it's just nonsense.
Well, I want to talk about the cars, which to me is like the whole reason why, yes, I like the Fast and Furious movies. I'm one of the few that does. I laugh at them now, well, but this kind of started off, but the 50 cars, which, you know, they name it after girls, which is, I think it's kind of cool. As in a covert op sort of way, when you're talking on the mic, you know, you have to use nicknames and things like that. You know, I actually have all 50 cars and names right now pulled up in front of me. Okay. I'm not going to name them all, but these are my favorite of the cars. Okay. We have Pamela, which is the Chevy Corvette. Angela, which is the Ferrari 550. Can't speak Italian. Martinello. There we go. The Ford Thunderbird, Suzanne, which is a very old name. And then, of course, my favorite, Eleanor, which is the last car that they drove with the Shelby GT 500. The one that he was basically having sex with while touching it and just...
He also apparently tried to steal that car like 6 times and failed each time. Mm-hmm. They bring up.
Yep.
Yeah. And I guess we should mention beginning, it's the exact same list of cars before, and they're writing it on the wall with blacklight paint.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Lindo figures out the scheme, but becomes important later. I mean, the script is cheesy at times, but it works. They fit it together kind of nicely. So, yeah, they're trying to re-get these cars. They give them women's names, like Nora said, so that if you mention them on the radio and someone's listening in, all they hear is the ladies. This is exactly 2000, because otherwise you would just be using cell phones and people can't intercept cell phone texts. But since you're using, I guess walkie-talkies across the entire city, you're doing fine.
One thing that upset me about the naming convention is one of the things they're stealing is a 1962 Aston Martin, and they don't give it a proper Bond girl name.
What's the name of it?
That is Barbara.
Barbara.
Well, I mean, it could be Barbara Broccoli, the one who owns Bond.
Ooh.
Could also be Barbara Bach, the actress in The Spy Who Loved Me. But, I mean, come on, name that one Honey or something.
Pussy galore.
How about Barbara Bush? She was the first lady at the time.
Right. I mean, Pamela's funny because it's a car that's mostly plastic.
Hey, now.
I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. Anyway. So, I mean, he goes along the way and picks everyone up. You know, he gets Robert Duvall involved. He tracks down Angelina Jolie, who's kind of she's a grease monkey. She runs a mechanic shop. At one point, I think she drinks from an oil can for some reason after rejecting him. And then she goes to work at a bar.
Gone straight and was working at the bar. That was kind of her job.
Between 1996 and 2010, I just did not question what Angelina Jolie was doing. I mean, after I found out that she was wearing Billy Bob Thornton's blood in a necklace, it's like, all right, you do you.
Yeah.
And you have dreads in this movie.
Oh, she has terrible dreads.
The white tourist dreads.
And they're awful. They're like, these are truly awful dreads.
Yeah, but that's what people wore in 2000.
Do you care? Do you care? No, you're like,
this is a movie with the strange haircuts. Like Christopher Eccleston, who wears his hair the way I do and it starts getting long, and Angelina Jolie with dreads.
I mean, I think Chris Eccleston's wearing a piece. The man has been bald for a long time.
But wearing his hair that may not be real, I mean, still.
Yeah, no, it's something. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, trying to watch, like, along with this, he calls up the Sphinx at some point, the Sphinx doesn't speak, which is totally fine. As Nick Cage is leaving the bar, as you mentioned, Master P beats the crap out of Nick Cage. The Sphinx shows up, destroys his car, puts a Molotov cocktail in the gas tank, and then beats up all of them without saying a word again. Because Vinnie Jones is that. I mean, that's why you hire Vinnie Jones, because he's a tall, angry, strong, violent, horribly violent man.
Every frame he's in, he always just looks like that's his mugshot. That's Vinnie Jones.
He looks like he should be playing Frankenstein's monster, is what he looks like in every
scene. Yeah, he does. Just needs more stitches.
God, can you imagine? Guy directing a a Mary Shelley interpretation. Just a bunch of people.
Play the juggernaut.
Ish. A bunch of people with Cockney rhyming slang just talking about... God, what a terrible movie.
So in the second act, there's two things that we need to discuss. First, there's that montage where they try and find out where the cars they need to steal are. So it's like them bribing the DMV and all that stuff. Second, there's apparently when Nick Cage arrives, there's a rival car thief syndicate in town run by a gentleman who goes by B.
Right.
And he's the one who's he actually shows up and tries to kill them or like run them out of town a couple times. But yeah, there's that whole thing where they're like inside a diner and B tells them to get out. But, you know, the two car cops are there, shall we say. And so he can't move. And eventually, I think the car cops arrest B.
Right. They have this whole elaborate scheme where they hook a chain on a tow truck to the gangster's underside of their car, and the tow truck drives it, rips the car out from under them, and the cops show up and catch them with all these guns.
That's what it is. Yes, kind of could have been interesting if I don't know, B had gotten the list and was trying to steal the same cars at the same time.
Right, and there's a race to the finish. Over right. Like the GT or something. Although I will say, having him versus Delroy Lindo is kind of enough. You know, you don't want too many cooks at the end of the scene. I don't know.
Yeah, because once they get arrested at the diner, the rival car theft gang isn't really an issue anymore.
It was like, a funny scene, though.
Like they beat up Nicolas Cage, they get their cars destroyed, they chase them through a bunch of yards, including a doghouse, and they get busted at a diner.
Yeah, I mean, and there's this is Jerry Bruckheimer, so there's stupid jokes everywhere, but this one I remember well. But, like, they jump over the fence. Giovanni Ribisi falls into a cage that says, you know, beware of dog, and then a puppy comes out and licks his face. Mm. And then the villains jump over the fence, and then there is also just a full-size Rottweiler there or whatever. It's kind of a joke.
I thought it was funny.
It's good. No, I'm not complaining about it. It's just it's halfway to a joke. It's just
probably funny. The funniest scene is when the pizza guy and the crew steals a car that's full of heroin, and then one of the car cops shows up at the garage and they're trying like desperately to get rid of all the white power.
There's all the cocaine that was in the 70s in the movies.
Yeah,
there was
craft services. They stole the craft service car and it rolled onto set. But yeah, then Delroy Lindo revs the engine to blow away all the powder on the ground. I don't know. And it's also funny because it's like, why the fuck did you steal the car? And then everyone's like, yeah, why the fuck did you steal the car?
I think the younger brother and his gang are just a bunch of idiots. Like one of them wants to brain the cop with a crowbar in the shop.
Right. Scott Cann's character.
No, that's the whole point. They're idiots.
Yeah. Right. James Caan's son, Scott Caan, is in this. Nothing like a little inside baseball. That kid is not a good actor.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he's
no, he's good on Hawaii 5-0. If you guys ever watched that, that's the only thing that he's really been doing.
But you know what? You're right. He's a TV actor. He's a TV actor in a movie. Yeah,
because he was in a lot. I remember he was like, of course, he did the Ocean's movies, but I think what was that movie with Will Smith and Gene Hackman?
Enemy of the State.
Enemy of the State. He was like a background character. Every type of movie where they had like an assembly of cast during that period in like the early 2000s, you could always see Scott Caan from what I've seen.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, it's just like Scott Eastwood will show up in things because everyone knows his dad. And you're just like, you know, can you give my son a role, please? I guess while we're here, we should also mention the incredibly, like, I don't know. Nick Cage treats it like it's some sort of spiritual moment. But right before they steal the cars, they play the song Lowrider.
One of the greatest songs of the 20th century, Lowrider.
It's something and the
song that wakes me up at 2 in the morning while I'm watching George Lopez. I'd be taking a nap if I fall asleep watching Nickelodeon, and all of a sudden I see the little what's it called, the cowbells, the little da-da-da-da, and boom, I see George Lopez and then his cast jumping.
Low rider song plays. I'm gonna need some help with this, Nora. You just referenced Lowrider, George Lopez, and Nickelodeon. How do those three things connect?
So
Nickelodeon After Dark.
Oh boy.
Yeah, Nick at night.
Nick at night.
Not edgy. Nick at night.
Yes.
You mean they're not airing I Love Lucy anymore?
Not anymore. God, I don't know where you can get I Love Lucy besides the streaming platform.
Yeah. And stuff.
But no, but to Nick's point, that's his hype song. That's like that's the run out music before they steal 50 cars in one night, which I don't know if y'all ever carpooled and stuff. It takes forever. I don't know how you can manage to do this within one night period. There's no fucking way. No. I mean, they do make a good point saying, oh, we need to all do this in one night. If not, there are going to be like red flags and things are reported and blah, 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 blah. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the whole idea is that by stealing them all in one night, people won't have a chance to report them the next morning. So people won't be on high alert yet. But since Delroy Lindo already knows that they're doing this, it kind of doesn't matter, kind of, sort of. But anyway, that's the name of the game they are playing. Man, you got me down a rabbit hole. I'm just looking at the shit that used to be on Nick at Night and now is on Nick at Night. And
oh boy,
it's like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, George Lopez, just that like TGIF, you know, shows that are kind of like not necessarily G-rated anymore, so they just put it at Nick at Night, that sort of thing.
See, back in my day, young man, that's where they put all those sitcoms from the 60s on it at night on the Nick at Night show.
Well, if it's 30 years old, 30 years ago in the 90s was the 60s, 30 years ago now is the 90s. Aren't we feeling old now?
Matt, no. I don't like your math. I do not care for your math.
I mean, did y'all know Delroy Lindo is British?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. No, I'm on his Wikipedia page. It says he's a British American.
Yeah, but he was born in London. I mean, so is the very British Chris Eccleston in this. Incredibly British Chris Eccleston. He just plays generic nonsense. He has one level, and he's fine. I like him, but he's just twitchy, angry. That's what he plays. Even when he was on Doctor Who, that's kind of who he was. You know, PTSD, kind of out of control, on the verge of murdering everyone in the show. Kind of great.
Well, that's why he's my favorite Doctor, because he acts like a dude who's 10,000 years old who killed off his entire species.
I mean, he does. He apparently hated the show. That's why he's on it for one season.
He hated Russell T. Davies, is my understanding.
That makes sense. And he still shows up now and again. But, you know, whatever. In the meantime, I mean,
Can we get to the actual theft scenes? I mean, we've gone pretty much over the first half.
That's kind of where we are. I mean, after doing the research, Delroy Lindo notices some weird things. He's tracking specifically Mercedes because when they arrested Scott Kahn, I think, had a dude who worked for the DMV. And at the time, the fanciest, most complicated keys to pirate were the like laser cut Mercedes keys.
Oh, shit, this scene.
Yeah. And so because they had those keys at the time, right, and they figured that Scott Kahn's character would once again use the same dude to try to rip off the same Mercedes. And he doesn't quite know that they're the same cars yet, but he has a gut feeling because they at least make Delroy Lindo a competent cop in this. He's not like 5 minutes too late, right? They give it an actual kind of even ground, which makes it more interesting in some ways. But because of this, there's this kind of scene where they put the screws to this guy saying like, look, you literally broke the law by making these illegal key copies. You help us find the dude and we won't charge you, essentially. And because of that, they know that there's these six Mercedes or whatever that they need to keep their eyes on because they're kind of rare and they have their keys. So by observing them, Delroy Lindo kind of has this idea where Nick Cage is going to be, or at least some of his people. And since he's reusing people who've been arrested before, he has a file on them and knows what to look for. This leads to the night of how they're trying to get Nick Cage's gang. So, yeah, well, that's the only other thing we have to get to.
They do things like plant dirty cars that they're targeting. So, you know, if they try and steal a Mercedes, then the car cops will be there to arrest them. So there's that one scene where the car cops are watching a guy and he realizes that it's dirty, I think, because Nick Cage calls him up and then retreats.
Well, he realizes from doing the surveillance previously from that Mercedes that you referenced to, Daniel, he had noticed that the surveillance van was parked four houses down. And then, like, when he looked up, it was parked two houses forward. So I guess his fucking photogenic memory made him suspicious. And then, like he said, they all thought they were made and stuff. I just want to just point this out because when I watch these movies, I watch it with my girlfriend, and then she kind of, especially if the movie is really, really silly, she'll point out like plot holes and things like that. So we were watching the movie, and so Nick, when they realize that the Mercedes keys was going from the same dealership and going back, they do follow Scott Cann. The police do follow Scott Cann's character back to the warehouse where they had on his list.
Right.
My question is, that was the plot hole for me. How come he didn't bust them then and there when he had opened the door and saw everyone just scheming and writing out plans? That was the only plot hole of the movie that I saw. And I'm just like, hold on, this movie could have been ended
in 20 minutes.
In 20 minutes and everyone loses.
That's right. And I mean, Delroy, again, they make him a pretty competent cop because, like, it's several times. Tim Oliphant wants to arrest everyone. He goes, no, we have to have evidence. We have to let them commit the crime. And you're right. There's a couple times. And like the whole thing hinges on why do they have black light glass from a black light bulb, right? And then like an hour and 30 minutes in, he gets back from CSI. This is from a glass light bulb, from a black glass light bulb. From a hardware store. Thanks. And you're just like, oh God, This took 2/3 of the movie to get to. And then he just walks around with it and it's just like, holy shit, they're going to get.
They're going to steal cars.
Right. And I bet he's going to have sex in it or whatever he's going to do. But yeah. And then of course, like you said, we get to this montage of them stealing cars. Notable ones. There is a really fancy, I believe it's a Jeep, pickup truck, a Jeep Gladiator, I think, or it might be a Hummer Gladiator.
It's a Hummer, the Hummer H1, the one that had the license plate Snake.
Snake, yeah. And Snake, it's a Vinny Jones and a guy who desperately wants to be his friend by playing rap. And there's a snake in the cab, which leads him to run a cop car into its grave and throw a snake out the window, which is good. That's kind of the best one. And then he says the girls are dirty over the microphone.
Yeah.
Hummer, it's a gas guzzler. I remember I wanted a Hummer when it first came out.
Oh, really?
The H2 Hummer. Yeah, they had the H2 Hummer. And then I remember Katrina happened.
Uh-huh.
Hurricane Katrina. And then gas prices just went up for some reason. I never understood the economical makeshift and how that two correlated for some reason. That's, I don't science. Know. And then science. And then that like turned me away from that. But I do remember that scene that made me not want that Hummer, but the H2 Hummer itself. But yeah. And now I want a Tesla, but I'm too broke.
There's still somebody in my condo complex that's got a Hummer, and it's just so weird to see.
It does seem out of place now. Well, in a lot of these, like, I saw an Escalade yesterday and I was like, really? But yeah, I mean, they're still there. They're still massive. It is worth noting again, at some point along here, Giovanni Ribisi's terrible gang of thugs nearly fucks it up again. I think stealing the Escalade, right?
Because
They steal it from a bunch of rich white people in a neighborhood who are having like, oh my God, we're having the greatest high school party ever. And some girl just walks by and whatever, I forget which one, is just standing there with an open mouth, heavy breathing, and has nothing to say to her while they're stealing this fucking car. And then the neighborhood rent-a-cops just fucking shoot him.
Rent-a-cops like that have guns?
I mean...
And is that police protocol to shoot?
Hey, man, you know what? At least it was a car filled with white people. Otherwise, in any other movie, it would have just been TJ Cross who got shot 6 times.
We got to have Mayor... Is he the only... No, Master P. No, that was stupid. Here's the thing that I kind of realized. You ever do a makeshift game saying, hey, if I was in a heist movie, what would I do? You know, who would I be and stuff like that. So in a sense, of course, I don't think I'd be the warehouse guy. I'd be the guy behind the computer, which is the one who got shot, apparently, because he felt like he couldn't do enough in the chest, mind you. And he still survived. The bullet hit his heart. It did. No, it did. Straight up. By rental cop. Lucky aim.
So, just for a chance to look for half a second at a girl in a bikini and breathe heavily through his mouth. The dude takes around like 3 rounds in him, and then he drives out of movie town. We don't see like really what happens to him, but like Will Patton takes him and Giovanni Ribisi to the hospital to get stitched up because the dude has bullets in him. But yeah,
I'm pretty sure they went to like a vet because they couldn't go to the hospital. Right.
Nothing is more important than the health and safety of my freaks. I'm sending you to a vet.
But I do like the idea that he's biting down on a squeak toy while they pull the bullet out of him. You know, like, I will say, though, like, that would put it solidly in, like, early 90s action. Instead of a Nick Cage 2000s action movie, make it an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Or if you want to do it today, make it The Rock, directed by Taika Waititi. And, like, if that's where you take him to, like, a vet, and every time he's like, squeak. And then they have to stitch him up as he's biting down on a squeak toy. Kind of better movie.
We have 60 seconds to steal this car.
Oh, no.
This is an Arnold movie. Well, if he was an Arnold movie, he would just kill Caligari and his two goons and get his brother out of the truck, out of the car in the crusher by just ripping the steering wheel off.
I mean, I would totally be fine if he has to finish the mission, but the whole way he's killing off the other gang members. Why not?
We're gonna move past this, but I don't think we've really appreciated the man, the myth of Nicolas Cage during this time period in his life and his career. The only reason why I say this is because I watched a 20-minute video of the life and career of Nicolas Cage, and before this, I don't know. I think this was during the time where he was makeshift on the decline, if I may say. During his movie period, because it's not like how it is now where he's, you know, much loved in his direct-to-DVD or streaming service as it is now movies. But I think along with this, what is it, Warlord and mm-hmm. Family Man during this time, could I really appreciate was Nicolas Cage's good movies because, you know, because Dear God, what was it, The Wicker Man?
Wicker Man is around this time, too. It's like a few years after this. You also have the Weatherman movie, which is interesting. But yeah,
I did enjoy Lord of War. That's a really underrated movie.
Oh, it's totally fine. But I will say, I think you're right, Noor. This is the time when he started getting addicted to buying castles.
That's it.
Yeah. And the IRS started giving him huge bills.
Which he also owed. But I mean, like, so you're right. The name of the game is, at this point, we're starting to see the beginnings of Crazy Cage. Like, and for an actor who does everything, much like I give credit to someone like Samuel L. Jackson, when you hire Nick Cage for a movie, he'll fucking do your movie. Like, he'll give you Crazy Cage. He'll do the, because again, the Wicker Man movie is a terrible movie, but you can't blame Nick Cage for that because he brings those fucking bees. Oh, yeah. Not the bees! Not the bees! Like, he's awesome.
He's done a lot of great indie movies recently. He was just in that one movie, Pig.
Pig. It's a movie I could take or leave, but he is very good in Mandy.
Color Out of Shape. Is that what it's called?
It's Color Out of Space.
Color Out of Space. Thank you, Matt.
Yep.
And he was in Kick-Ass.
He was.
Which was
don't forget
a very underrated movie.
Which one?
Willy's Wonderland.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Well, how was it? I haven't seen it.
It was all right.
And okay. Of course, we can't forget his biggest movie ever and his best movie ever, which is Into the Spider-Verse.
He's great in that.
Yep, he was a voice actor.
Yep.
And he's really good in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. He's in it for 45 seconds, but he's fine in it.
Oh, yeah, he's Superman, isn't he?
The role he's always wanted to play, but no one wants to let him. I will also say two of the best Stan Lee cameos ever are in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Oh, no, this is a DC movie. I got to get out of here. It's awesome. See Teen Titans Go to the Movies, one of the best animated movies of all time, or of the last 20 years, along with Into the Spider-Verse, which is also up there.
Do you think we deserved a Nicolas Cage Superman movie directed by Tim Burton?
No.
Do you think we were up for that?
It would have been awful.
I disagree.
You think so?
I wanted it. I think, especially for that time period, would you have rather watched that or Superman Returns, Daniel?
Well, I mean, Superman Returns came out a lot later, but...
that's the closest one.
In terms of that time period, John Peters would have demanded that it look too much like Batman Forever.
Yeah, probably. Although I think Superman belongs in a world like a Schumacher's Batman Forever than Batman does. He's bright colored, he's vivid, he's happy-go-lucky.
Is that why they gave him a black suit to wear and why John Peters said he can't wear the blue and red costume?
I mean, that's what Superman was wearing at the time. This is after Death of Superman. But this is a discussion for another day, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I do like Nick Cage doing his caginess. It just sucks that, I mean, it's kind of like Robin Williams playing the Riddler. The one role he wanted to play, they dangled in front of him and took away. And both of them have to do with DC, which I guess leads to why Kevin Feige, for all of his faults, deserves all the credit he gets, because Marvel is making real good movies. And I guess, spoilers, I've enjoyed very much the recent Suicide Squad movie. But so often DC will have something good and then screw it up with the next movie. I liked Aquaman. Why haven't they focused on getting an Aquaman 2 out there?
The Snyder Cut actually wasn't all that bad except for the epilogue.
Which one?
Did you watch all – I watched it the 4 hours in one sitting. Yep. I was literally – just up, just forcing myself. I literally at one point had to keep my eyes up like this because I couldn't, because I wanted to finish it. But yeah, to your point, DC, it's honestly, it's just the management. It's the Warner Brothers that's causing all that flip-flop and only looking at the numbers and shit. Because to your point, Nick, in many ways, Warner Brothers has fucked up a lot of things because of studio interference. The last Suicide Squad by David Ayers, the Justice League, Batman v Superman, Jerry Bruckheimer's getting rid of Tim Burton, go with the Batman Forever director. What was his name?
Joel Schumacher.
Joel Schumacher, just because he wanted to get, you know, toy sales and things like that. So,
yeah. Yeah, they just don't have the same kind of voice. I agree.
No, but I'd rather gotten a Nicolas Cage Superman movie than a Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider movie.
Ooh. I've seen them both. They're both awful. They really are. One of them's an episode on our feed. One of them is a Cineprof riff. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised which is which. Anyway, the last 30 minutes of this is him trying to steal Eleanor.
Yeah,
like literally, there is a 23-minute segment of a two-hour movie of him trying to steal a 1969 Ford Mustang GT 500 Shelby, all of which is nonsense. Shelby was a designer who made the original Ford. They didn't start calling them Ford Shelbys until after this movie came out. But regardless, it's a sexy car. I like the old 60s Mustangs. I really do.
And then, of course, he breaks the side mirror on it.
He breaks everything.
He fucks up the whole car.
Pile of dust. Right? I mean, he calls it Eleanor lovingly, but he wrecks that car.
Fucking Dukes of Hazzard that shit on the highway, man.
And it's funny though, it's Dukes and Hazzard, but in the real world for everything else. So when he like he jumps a truck over and like jumps over a fire truck, lands on the other side, and the car just fucking breaks in half. It's something.
And I can appreciate that was the only sorry I was really loud. And I can appreciate that that was the only CGI was with this Dukes of Hazzard type stunt. And I get it. I get it. I ain't gonna fucking jump over. I don't want to pay for an Evel Knievel type stunt where half all the movie. You probably let off the movie budget for all the car explosions and shit like that. So right. I can appreciate that was the only CGI movie within these 2000s. And even then, I can only tell it was CGI because I watched it here in 2021. But when I was a kid seeing it for the first time in theaters in the year 2000, I thought that was the best fucking thing I've ever seen at the time. So.
I mean, it's a cool shot, and Nick Cage plays it well. You know, it is what it is. You know, I mean, by that point, that's the last car. We see them stealing, like, kind of, we see them stealing to one degree or another about 25 or 30 of the cars. We focus on five or six of them, including at one point, the Bulldog owned by Robert Duvall eats the keys, and they have to feed the dog a bunch of Alpo and Ex-Lax and wait for the dog to shit out the keys.
And then a bunch of people try and attack them from another gang, and then he scares them off by like rooting in dog poo and grosses them out.
Mm-hmm. I think Michael Penn played one of the gangsters.
He did. Michael Penn. That's exactly
right. It's Luis from Ant-Man, Michael Pena.
Yeah, Michael Pena.
Was that him?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was.
That's which, by the way, have y'all seen, was it Fury with Brad Pitt and Shia LaBeouf? Michael Pena in that movie is excellent as well. I think overall it's a great movie because you haven't seen it.
Yeah. It's very good. This is one of his earliest films. That is Michael Pena. You're absolutely right. He's in that terrible movie, Tom and Jerry, that came out this year. That's not worth watching.
Hey, a paycheck is a paycheck.
I think there was a movie, it was based off, it's a recent horror movie, based off that show. Fantasy Island, that was it.
Mr. Rourke in that, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. What? You guys haven't seen
Wait. He replaced Ricardo Montalban?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
If you haven't seen that movie, you kind of have to sort of see that movie.
You'll watch it.
It's stupid, but it is kind of fun stupid.
Who plays his assistant?
Oh, that is CGI. No. I'm looking. I completely forgot. Because, like, he's the only real actor, I think, in that whole movie.
No, ABC
Michael Rooker is in it. Michael Rooker is in it.
I'm looking this up now because I refuse to believe this exists.
It exists. It's that, what's that movie company that only makes horror movies?
Blumhouse?
Yeah, it's Blumhouse. Blumhouse made it last year.
Knowing you, Daniel, it's going to piss you off.
Oh, no.
I know practically nothing about the original show except for the SCTV spoofs, but this just seems like a bad idea.
Dude, Rooker is in this. Michael Rooker. If you don't know who Michael Rooker is, he's at the beginning of he plays the blue guy from Guardians of the Galaxy. He's the one who says, "I'm Mary Poppins, bitch." He's also in the new Suicide Squad movie at the very beginning for a little bit.
Yes, and he was the main villain in Mallrats. He was in Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. That was his first big thing.
Michael Rooker plays like a gruff motherfucker in everything he's in, and he's very, very good. He's also
really, really charming man in real life.
He's also in Fast 9. He's had a very – since he was in – I mean, he's had a great career anyway, but since he appeared in that first Guardians movie, he's been in like 40 things.
He was also in the first season, and I think another season of The Walking Dead.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he was.
He's Merle, right? Merle Dixon, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he's good.
We should come back to this movie though. We're at the scene, I think, with the last car, Eleanor, and we talked about the Dukes of Hazzard son. So he gets the car to Chris Eccleston, but then he's like, what, 12 minutes late?
12 minutes late. Yep. Okay.
And so apparently the deal's off, and Nick Cage tries to threaten him. So Chris Eccleston just has his mooks take him to the back and start beating him.
But he's Nick Cage, so he gets the upper hand immediately.
Yeah.
And then there's kind of a, you know, a hide-and-seek, hunty, the last villainy kind of scene throughout this warehouse. And at this point, Delroy Lindo is also back on the case. Chris Eccleston and Nick Cage have a shootout. Delroy Lindo hears the shots. He's sneaking in. Nick Cage then saves Delroy Lindo's life.
He shoves Chris Eccleston over a it's a rail kill, basically. He shoves him over a rail, and then he falls to his death.
To Matthew's point, where was it, Matthew?
He falls dramatically with some questionable CGI into the coffin he'd made for Kip.
That's right.
Memphis's loser brother.
Yep. I mean, he falls like the Joker into the vat in Batman 89. Like, it's just like, no! Or High Anxiety with Mel Brooks. But yeah, and that's it. And he is impaled on his own coffin, making it useless. Nick Cage started this fight full by circle. Breaking a chair. That he had worked on. If your villain has one character trope, killing him by that's classy filmmaking.
But at one point, Nicolas Cage manages to hold him off for a bit by taking his hand-carved ottoman hostage.
That's right.
And Christopher Eccleston goes from being a complete psycho to begging him not to mess with his hand-carved ottoman.
That's right. Delroy Lindo ends the scene by effectively the same way that John Lithgow says goodbye to the Sasquatch at the end of Harry and the Hendersons. Get out of here! Don't! Just go! I don't want you anymore! Get out! Go!
After Nicolas Cage tells him where the stolen cars are.
That's right. As he's leaving, he goes, check Pier 14 or whatever. You'll find some interesting merchandise in Pier 14. Which then allows us to end this movie, because with Chris Eccleston dead, the whole movie doesn't matter. Literally, it doesn't matter at all.
Well, the ending is kind of funny with with Ribisi buying Cage the exact same car he just stole his Eleanor, but it's real beat up. So it's like, you get to restore it, which we know you like to do. And he offers Angelina Jolie a ride, and it promptly breaks down.
Dude, we have an erectile dysfunction joke right at the end, or whatever, a premature ejaculation joke. He goes, oh, man, already? No, little girl. Or whatever he says. No, Eleanor. Oh, man.
Why hasn't Nick Cage ever played Elvis? I just don't know.
In his vast extension of his, he kind of sort of did in the movie Wild at Heart.
He did. Although, if you're going to hire yourself an Elvis, check out Kurt Russell's Elvis.
What was that movie with, was it High at Heart? The one he did where he was like a gang of Elvis and like he fucked Courtney Cox in a motel with a kid in another room?
That's something, it's Something to Graceland, right?
2,000 Miles to Graceland.
That's 2,000 Miles to Graceland. And actually, if I recall correctly, Quentin Tarantino plays Elvis in an episode of The Golden Girls, which is really a sentence that was put together in 1990 and it stuck. Yeah, so Giovanni Ribisi buys the car. Angelina Jolie goes for a ride. The car immediately dies after, like, Angelina Jolie's shirt nearly tears open and everyone cheers as they go off to have sex.
And then the end, either the end credits song or the song in the scene before he gets the car is Ben Caught Stealing by Jane's Addiction.
That's right. And then smash cut to credits. That's it. Daniel, I'm going to... cut to you first because I think you had the perfect review for this movie online, and then we'll go to Daniel, then Noor, and then Matt. Daniel, what do you got?
I mean, this is kind of this movie just feels weird these days because action movies just aren't like this anymore. Now, some movies can overcome that, like they don't really make movies like Die Hard anymore, but this just feels, I mean, this was just a cut and paste of what action movies were in the late 90s and early 2000s up until, I think, like we said earlier, The Bourne Identity. It's fine. It's not terrible. The car chase scenes and the scenes where they're actually stealing the cars are actually pretty suspenseful. But I mean, overall, it's just it's certainly not one of the best in anything.
Sure. That's not what I thought you were going to say at all. Nora, what do you got?
So this movie combines, like I mentioned throughout this recording, many elements from my favorite race car movies. It has Fast and Furious' family aspect, as well as Ocean's Eleven's heist aspect, and, you know, overall brotherly love. This movie is really cool. It's nice to be nice to watch a movie kind of nostalgic in a way that that's, if this happened in 2021, they'd be arrested just for like thinking all that kind of shit. You know, and also like I can totally see this thing happening where like a South American warlord wants all these cars and this kind of things happen. But, you know, overall, I really enjoyed the movie. I'll definitely watch this again. I only rented it this time. But yeah.
Matt?
It was all right. The second half is better than the first. I liked evil Christopher Eccleston because I like Christopher Eccleston. I think it's more of a rent than a buy.
Okay, so I'm going to say what I thought Daniel was going to say because it's what we talked about earlier. This is kind of a perfect Saturday or Sunday afternoon movie. You don't really have to pay attention to it. It moves. It's kind of funny at times, kind of fun at times. It's virtually inoffensive. And I mean, Daniel's point of they don't make movies like this anymore. But part of the reason they don't make movies like this anymore is that action movies, with the exception of the Fast and Furious movies, which especially the last three or four have just been kind of fun, they don't make fun action movies. Everything has to be so fucking serious, which is kind of why I like the Chris Nolan movies, but I don't revisit those Batman movies very often. It's because they're so fucking serious. This is fun. And again, you don't have to ever pause it. You go to the bathroom, you go up to get your, you know, you get another beer, totally fine. You're not going to miss anything that matters. So I say this is one that just kind of stays on my shelf. And whenever I'm just like, yeah, I can watch something. This falls in that category of like a Hal Needham 70s or 80s movie. Like, just watch it. There's no problem here. It's totally fine. It's totally fun. Totally enjoyable. In the meantime, we're out of time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning on in. I'm sure we've talked for 90 minutes on this episode. But in the meantime, keep listening, keep subscribing, keep referring your friends here. We've gotten some weird bursts of activity from countries I didn't even think would bother to listen. So while we're exploding in popularity, I guess, keep sharing and reviewing and rating us and doing all those things because it helps people find the show for the first time. And thanks. Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.